fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
And I'm Dan Dugan, the other guy on the other side. WGRN, the Green Renaissance.
This is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news. 94.1 WGRN. And 92.7 and 98.3 on WCRS in the studio again with local professor Columbus State, whose expertise is in black studies and black history. And she also knows a whole lot about white people. She's been around. She's studied it. She's scholarly. And she's also got a master's in political science. So before I ask her about black history topics as we end this February 28th, I want to ask her about Michael Cohen, who asserted that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, is a racist.
And has used the N-word in private private conversations now, but of course that couldn't be possible because he does have that black person who they were able to
introduce. Well, there was
to
a black woman that had worked for him,
and that guy who was his chauffeur in the 80s, he's got to be black. He's real light, but he's black. He's like the CEO of one of Trump's companies, and said he would do. Trump asked him, "Would you do anything for me?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, to this day, he still says, "I love Trump. I'd do anything for him." But I think he's black.
But he was a chauffeur, right?
He started out as a chauffeur in security, now he's like a executive, big time executive. And his son now works for the Trump people in security. So he can't possibly be racist because he had two black employees.
So,
well, I'm pretty sure that second guy was black.
Because when I was watching CNN, there actually was a debate as to, of course, the definition of racism, right? That you have a position of power. There was actually a debate on whether Trump was merely racially insensitive or actually objectively racist.
Yes.
So here's my notion. Charlottesville. You know,
there were some
really
fine people on both sides.
Yeah, exactly. He is the president. I mean, I'm thinking he's got some power.
Yeah.
And if you send out a message with your power that neo-Nazis and Klansmen, white supremacists, are equal to those protesting, those advocating a new Holocaust, is that you are objectively racist.
Well, let's just take the objectively out there. Just take that modifier out and just, you know, flat out call it. And he's a racist. You can trot out all the black employees that he, well, he's probably just trotted out the two that he has because Omarosa's gone.
Clearly,
so he had three.
Bigoted, yes. Biased, yes. Prejudice. Yes. Right? It was only black people who would live in this way, in this area.
Exactly. Yep. We talked about that. So he's a racist. And Harris has taken him on about that. Kamala Harris has taken him on about that. So we can rest assured that we've picked that bone clean.
Okay, but what about the black woman standing right by the congressman? She clearly was black.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like she's a prop or something.
Well, what about Omarosa?
Another prop. For the life of me, I cannot I'm sorry. Usually I let people, you know, their political things, they're none of my business. That's the good thing about living in America. But why any black person or any person of color would be interested in working for or with Donald Trump, I will never understand. Never.
But here's a tough question. Was Lyndon Johnson racist?
Let's see.
Didn't he have Roger Wilkins working for him?
He did, and he had a black chauffeur and a cook, and Zephyr, his cook, she was about the only person who could tell him off.
Did he not occasionally? It almost slipped out the N-word, but he'd catch it and apologize. Then Riot, what if an pregnant woman was shot?
Yeah.
We'd never hear the end
of it. Well, he did use that word, in fact, when Fannie Lou Hamer was testifying, and he had the television on. That's what he yelled, "Get them off the stage." So, yes, he did use that word, and he had the prejudices of his time. And when he was in the Senate, he voted against the first president
from the Confederacy since the Civil War.
And when he was in the Senate, he voted against the 57 Civil Rights Act and the 1960 Civil Rights Act. But look what happened.
1960, he had to manhandle some little Southern Senate. Yeah. He had to tell him, cuss him out.
Yeah.
Tell him I got $1 billion in my back pocket for you.
So,
toss him. Just,
you know, and as people are going through their old yearbooks and things, stuff like that, I guess my question is, what are we going to do? I mean, you're going to find this stuff. What are we going to do?
You're going to check everybody's
yearbook?
But we're not looking pre-64 Civil Rights Act or pre-Voting Rights Act.
Sorry.
This was like the Reagan era.
But you know what? Donald Trump said, don't judge my family on what we've done. Judge us now on what we're doing. So.
Well, because in the past he wrote C for colored on applications to his housing development.
Definitely. It's odd that a rich person would not want at least to have a black cook. You know?
I know. How are you going to show off?
I mean, Kennedy had a black valet.
Yeah, when I was in Atlanta.
Or valet.
And I got one of them last minute travel. I'm up on, the top floor, near the presidential suite. And, Jesse Jackson came up and tried to get it from me because, I had this great place to stay. And I remember there was a couple very prominent, wealthy-looking white couples. And all of them had, both of them had black nannies.
Yes. Well, if we can't do nothing else, we can cook and take care of kids.
These little well-dressed, I'm thinking, there's got to be some sort of.
We can cook and take care of kids if we can't do nothing else.
Well-entrenched.
Yes.
Traditions among the upper class.
Yes.
Speaking of that, you said you noticed this new book that's out. And after you read it, I expect you to come on the show and ponder it. Reconsideration, The Master's Wife. They were her property. White women as slave owners in the American South. Arguing that, they were brutal. They kept the system alive. They inherited more often. They
perpetuated. George Washington's wife, those were her slaves. He married a rich widow who had slaves and property.
Who had some chattel
property. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm not surprised at this. People have to remember when the men went off to the Civil War, white men went off to the Civil War, who was left to run the plantations? It was women. And they, by and large, they did. The men were off fox hunting or drinking, carousing, whatever. But that was not unusual in the South. I'm glad somebody has picked up on that.
And again, of course, where they got the information was the Federal Writers Project. WPA, when they went out, because not only did they come up with talking to a lot of old slaves, because this is the 1930s,
exactly.
And the Civil War was over in 1865.
Yeah. We listened to those tapes in my class, and they're just like blown away that you've got these voices. And what surprises my students is the lack of rancor when these people talk about slavery. And there's one guy, Fountain Hughes, everybody loves him because you could tell he's mad. He was mad then, he's still mad, and if he were alive today, he'd still be mad. But most of them spoke about their white folks, as one woman said, I remember all my white folks. And most of them spoke about them with, some affection or some pleasantness or something like that. But I do have my students listen to that. It's a great source. So I'm looking forward to reading that book.
And the other interesting part of it was the read not only black music, but
the Lomax father and son who stole. Yes, father and son who people they were accused of profiting off of that. But in the South and in Appalachia, Kentucky, Ohio.
Yeah, get before. Out the scrub board and, yeah. And I'll be blowing on the jug.
It's the culture. That's it. It's the culture, the cultural things, cooking, eating, manners and stuff are between in terms of blacks and whites are very much the same.
And again, I've told this story before, but when I was Jesse Jackson's attorney, I spent a little time with him. And I remember driving around Cleveland, and he told his driver, usual place. And we pulled up. There it was, the Cracker Barrel. And he said, I know what you're thinking, Dr. Fitrakis. I'm thinking, but there's crackers at the Cracker Barrel. That's what I'm thinking. And he was like a rock star. And then he went on to explain is that the one thing that brought people together where he was from, and I forget which of the Carolinas, but was Dark, food.
Yeah. Was food,
is that black and white people
eat the same food.
Same food, the same food.
And football. And that's why the South integrated football.
Well, you know, football in Kentucky, basketball, it's, you know, you get –
Texas football, even high school football.
Yeah, West Texas.
They take it seriously.
University there that beat the Kentucky squad that was all white.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to reading that. I saw that a couple of days ago that it was out, and so it's on my list.
But, well, it's interesting because they point out they got histories where they took out loans. You know, they made money loans because it was property. It was an asset.
It was. Insurance policy. Somebody has done a book in the last year or so about all the insurance policies for enslaved blacks. So, and Northerners made out real well with this too, because often they were the money lenders.
Now the you loan money, and they're really saying there was a brutal period of 1800 to 1860 mm-hmm. where they were really pushing expanding. The production of cotton mm-hmm. in a barbaric, you know,
cotton.
And really doing it with the whip and through intimidation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you go back to 1808 when it was no longer legal to import slaves outside of the country.
Which is right in our Constitution.
Yes, exactly.
You got 20 years to import.
Yes. So how do you get more slaves? You do that by, you know, trading across state lines or with people, or you do it by natural increase, or you do it by coming up with some arbitrary marker of blackness. And the one in the United States is the one drop rule.
The drop of blood.
Just one.
That's it. And that in Mississippi was 1/64th. Of any other race, meant you weren't Caucasian.
Yep. And you talk about westward expansion, what we see in now what we would call, I guess, the Pacific Northwest, Oregon. That kind of, Oregon's one of the most racist states and had a negligible black population.
Well, a lot of the white supremacists are demanding Washington and Oregon as an Aryan nation.
Well, yeah. Oregon goes way back in there. It's as bad as any southern state ever thought about being. So, you know, it's all over the place. Not just a southern kind of phenomenon.
But the food brought people together in the South.
Jesse was right.
And did you see the Green Book? Because you've got a long list the blackest.
Yeah, blackity black Oscar. Man, I have never
seen the official name.
I don't go to the movies very often. In fact, I think the last one I saw was... Get On Up about James Brown. But I was watching this because of the Green Book. I've done a lecture about that. I do a lecture about that in my class. And now it's been reprinted. And now somebody has done a Green Book for 2018. So I have to go get a copy of that. Still telling you where you should not go in the South and stuff when you're traveling.
Well, I hope this studio wasn't on the list.
No, it was. But... I kept hearing that this guy was a classical pianist.
Because we are WGRN 94.1, the Green Renaissance. So we're pro. We're part of the Green Book. We're the Green Renaissance.
And the Green Bill.
The Green
Congress,
Bill?
Congress, yeah. The Green Bill in Congress.
Yeah, the new Green New
Green Deal.
Yeah,
exactly. But I was a little confused because they kept referring to him as a classical pianist. Classical to me means... Beethoven, Bach, Brahms. He was a classically trained pianist. He started taking lessons when he was two. He also had three doctoral degrees. But he couldn't, when he was coming up, as a black person, you couldn't make money playing classical music. He did play with some people, and he played over in Europe. But he started infusing his music with jazz, and that was the real thing that made his career
a little classical with mm-hmm. some jazz yes, influences.
And my mother had some of his records because when she was, you know, younger.
But I thought your mother was a God-fearing woman that would only listen to gospel.
Well, she, you know, once she got to be that way, she didn't listen to, you know, she would listen to gospel music and classical music, but she had two of his albums. The most popular one she had was Waterboy, and I was blown away at that. But there's been a lot of dissension about it. Of course, Spike Lee spoke up. Now, part of that is sour grapes for them taking so long to recognize him, and that could be a whole other show. But
well, did you see the Black Klansman?
No, haven't been. Get on up, James Brown. That was the last
that
movie
was it.
So I think I'm going to have to go to Target.
I thought you said you saw Madea.
No, I've never seen any of those movies. And he's done his last one, he said. And I'm like, thank you, Jesus. But anyway, the family of the piano player and the guy who played him got an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. But the family is very upset because this is all about the chauffeur. And this is what serious people, academics, critics and stuff, this is the sticking point for movies about black people or black culture or incidents involving blacks, is they get stripped of their agency. And it's always a white person who comes in and saves the day.
Driving Miss Daisy.
Yes. So
Miss Daisy was one of the most boring people on earth.
Hulk, you my best friend.
Agency.
She did. So, you know, he's been stripped of that. And that was a supporting role. The movie was about the chauffeur. So,
and he was a culturally aware, proud mm-hmm. black man.
Yes.
Portrayed in the movie, you know, where his apartment was.
Yes, and exactly.
He lived over Carnegie Hall.
Well, his family is very upset. They said that they were not consulted. And, you know, the usual thing of stripping, you know, taking our stories and stripping black people of their agency
and
stuff
case,
like that.
And in this case, showing him stripped.
Yes.
And showing you that he
exactly.
was gay.
But, the whole idea is that a black person can win an Oscar for Best Supporting, but never the Oscar for Best Actor or Actress. But mm-hmm. we had a blackity black Oscar. There were 12 black people nominated across different categories, and 8 of them, I think, won. Now, we had the usual supporting actors, but we also had African-American Oscar winners in costume, in production. As director, Spike Lee, finally. And Cicely Tyson, the great Cicely Tyson, she got an honorary Oscar. She's 93. She had on a bad black woman's church hat at Aretha's home going. It was like it had its own zip code. So the Oscars were a little blacker.
Yes, Spike Lee should have won for Do the Right Thing.
Yes.
Or for Malcolm X.
Yes. And he mentioned that. First, Do the Right Thing, people. He was up there, mentioned that, Do the Right Thing. So, and he was very angry about that, and he spoke out about that immediately. So now the director of that movie, Green Book, they're kind of backpedaling, and they're on the defensive.
Or the one that was based on your life, She's Got to Have It.
Speaking
that
of
was
she's
NYU, right?
Speaking that was of she's got to have it, you see that ball gown that Billy
you do have to have man. That. You would have looked sharp in that.
Oh, I would have. You know,
kind
black's a good color for me too.
Kind
it was
of a
tuxedo
on
kind
top.
Of thing. Yeah,
you could have wore it with style.
I could have that and Cicely Tyson's hat. That would have shut the whole place down. But it was a very black Oscar thing. Still very slowly, but some improvement. We'll see how that plays itself out with the family of the musicians. Things.
Well, as a scholar, academic, do they have a point, this question of agency?
Yeah, they do. I assume the movie was about the musician. It's not. It's about the musician, the guy who played him, got a Best Supporting Actor award.
Right.
Same thing for Regina King,
I thought that
Best
was
Supporting Actress. So I assume that it was about the musician. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name. What was his name?
Now you get me on this one.
But yeah, we know what we're talking about. And it all comes down to, he said, whatever, you know, the director said that his father was specifically told not to speak to anybody in the family, told him if he was ever going to write a book or a movie, this is how it should look. The family is disputing that. So I don't think that's anything that's ever going to be straightened out. Yeah, so we'll see how that plays itself out. But the Oscars were looking black.
Absolutely.
But in this last week of Black History Month, I'm kind
of
glad.
Of the shortest month.
Because it has worn me out. No, this week has just been outrageous. It's like some of this stuff would be laughable if it didn't have such a terrible impact. For instance, the First Lady of Virginia, Pam Norton, you know, her husband is on the griddle for the blackface medical picture, which he now says was not him. She was leading a tour through the governor's mansion.
Next to a Klan member?
Yeah, and she passed out. She gave kids a little piece of cotton so they could feel why it was so difficult. It's prickly, it's spiny. She gave them a piece of cotton.
And imagine
that you had to pick this all day.
And you
8,
were enslaved.
10, 12 hours a day. So she's on the griddle for that. She, of course, her spokesperson has said she's working on becoming woke.
And then imagine an overseer showed up moonwalking with a whip.
Yeah. So that, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. There was another.
And you married him.
There's been a, and what is it about black people, white people, and black people's hair? What is the fascination? What, you know, when Bo Derek, you remember when she wore those braids?
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
was like, oh, every little black girl I know had braids like that. I had those braids in my head. You know, the mothers, when they get together and get in somebody's kitchen with a can of Dixie Peach and they'd press heads and stuff like that. But there have been these hair incidents. One young lady actually had her white teacher pull her braids out of her hair.
Whoa.
Which must have been incredibly painful. We had the wrestler who had to cut his dreads or else he couldn't wrestle.
Right, I remember that. The referee made him.
Yeah.
And for the record, I must admit, when I was a freshman in college, shout out to Vanessa Purcell and Sharonda, Sherelle, who, you know, kind of gave me cornrows.
Yes, they did.
But I had much thicker hair then, and I must admit, I didn't dress in
you
black.
You didn't?
But, you know, I was looking pretty sharp.
Well, you know, a white guy who had real kinky hair, big afro, so we called him Link after the guy on the Mod Squad.
Oh, Mod Squad, sure.
But there have been a lot of fights. These teachers and referees and coaches, you know, that it's not professional. It's always professional when white people wear dreadlocks or braids or, you know, whatever, but when
they're styling,
yeah they send them down the runways like that and think, you know, don't think anything about it. So that little girl lost some of her dreadlocks, and it must have been very, very painful for her. We saw some guys in the U.S. Navy who posted on Snapchat, because people think stuff doesn't stay on Snapchat very long and it's hard to trace. It's not. They were both in blackface. Now They imagine this as a white guy. What they did was, it wasn't cork or paint. Now you can get all, the big thing here is all these one and done masks, facial masks. The Koreans are real big in the skincare. And so they had these charcoal maps. So all you could see mask, and all you could see their eyes, their nose, and their lips, and they dropped the N-word a couple times and made fun of black people or something. So the Navy is looking into that.
As they well should be looking into the Coast Guard, because there was a terrorist guy in the Coast Guard.
But you know what?
Looking for a mass killing.
There are
a lot of
a lot of fine people in the Coast Guard. I dare you to not acknowledge that.
I'm not real sure. To tell you the truth, I've never hung out with anyone, and I'm sure, you know, they're not salty sea dogs, but I'm sure I wouldn't mind having a cold beer with most people in Coast Guard.
Did he have a stockpile there or what? And he was planning big. It was going to be big. But, you know, there are some bright spots in this last week of Black History. I have a young black girl who is a student at East Los Angeles Community College, named Tony Harris, who won a full-ride football scholarship to Central Methodist University. So she'll be the first scholarship black female on the playing on the scholarship position in the team. We will have, regardless of which woman wins, there will be the first black mayor of Chicago, because after the two that are left to do the runoff, both black and female. We will, let's see, there were some others there.
And we had a best picture about Dr. Donald Shirley. Yes. That's his name, Donald Shirley.
So some bright spots. We had a couple of designers who had to pull their things out of the stores for being insensitive to race. Gucci had a sweater where you pulled the neck of it up and it looked like blackface. Katy Perry, whoever she is, some singer or something.
Well-known, renowned singer.
She had
singer.
Some shoes that looked like blackface, so she pulled those. Prada.
I'm trying to imagine this. Your shoes. Will they?
I know.
Will they stoop how low? Bring out the blackface shoes.
Prada had a monkey handbag with a charm on it.
Okay.
The Black History site in England.
How do they pass? I mean, it's like, yeah, that's cool. That's a monkey handbag.
Yeah, well,
they're so, and those blackface shoes.
And they're so sorry. They didn't mean to offend anybody. And the Black History site in London, England, it was attacked twice by cyber people. So good and bad, yin and yang. Six on one hand, half dozen in the other.
Well, we also know that Donald Trump knew about WikiLeaks, thinking about hacks. He knew about it ahead of time that they were going to hack the DNC and release all that negative stuff about Hillary
Clinton.
Well, now
here's the thing. He says that Cohen is lying about that. In fact, he said Cohen lied about everything except
that Cohen he didn't beat his wife.
No, that. But what the one that...
Say
that,
Cohen says, one time he told the truth, I don't beat my wife.
No, Cohen said that he could find no collusion.
I grab women by the genitalia, but I don't beat my wife.
Yeah, he could find no place where Trump committed collusion here in terms of this. So Trump said, I'm surprised he didn't lie about that. I wonder why he didn't, because he lied about everything else. But that lets him off the hook. You know, that's the big C word for him. And I forgot to mention that we have the first black female CEO in the NBA, Cynthia Marshall of the Dallas Mavericks.
Uh-huh.
So black women on the run here. Black magic, black girl magic. Blackity Black
right.
Week.
And that's the theme of Black History Month.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, you always think of Du Bois, who said, you know, in 1901 that problem of the 20th century was going to be the color line. Of course, he was right. We're in the 21st century. It's still right. So as I said, six in one hand, half a dozen in the other. What are you going to do?
I don't know, but we now have the Oscars. In tremendous diversity. And not only was there a lot of black people, they threw in some other minorities and
they
people
did.
Of
they did.
Color.
There were some, as my Aunt Claire would say, there were some mixed couples. Honey, he mixed. So we saw a lot of that this time at the thing. Oh, I forgot to tell you that there were students in a South Carolina school who were made to pick cotton and sing slave songs.
What?
I like it when you fill the sack. I like it when you don't talk back.
What the hell? So we still got a long way to go. We're wrapping up. Thanks, Dr. Marilyn Howard.
Thanks for having me.
For being with us through the entire month of February, every week. Thank you.
An honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.